Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are on listen-only mode for today's conference until the question and answer session. To ask a question over the phone line, you may press star one. This conference is also being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I'll now turn the meeting over to John Leslie. Thank you, sir. Please begin.
Thank you very much. Good morning and good afternoon to everyone dialing in to hear about the status of the Advanced Baseline Imager or NOAA's GO 17 satellite. I'm going to get right out of the way and turn the floor over to Dr. Steve Valtz, the Assistant Administrator of NOAA's Satellite and Information Service. Dr. Valtz has a few opening remarks, and then we'll open up for your questions. Dr. Valtz.
All right. Thank you, John, and thank you all for dialing in this afternoon. So as you have already read in the statement provided earlier by John Leslie from NOAA, we are working at this time to address a performance issue with the cooling system associated with the GO 17 Advanced Baseline Imager instrument. The issue with the instrument is confined to a subset of the channels of the instrument. The ABI has 16 different spectral channels, and the infrared and near-infrared channels are affected by this cooling system issue. The visible channels, the three shortwave length channels below 1 micron length, are not affected and are functioning as expected. A team of experts from NOAA, NASA, the ABI developing contractor team, and others from industry are thoroughly and aggressively investigating this issue and looking at several options to correct the problem that we're having. If efforts to restore the cooling system are not successful, we are looking at alternative concepts and different modes for you to maximize the operational utility of this ABI for NOAA's National Weather Service and other customers going forward. It is important to emphasize, at this point, that we're 3 months now into a six-month checkout period on the GO 17 launch. We launched March 1st, and there are multiple other instruments on the payload, on the platform. The other instruments are all checking out fine and are doing their normal investigation process during the startup of a new major system. That's 4 space weather instruments and the geostationary lightning mapper, the other Earth-pointing instrument on the platform. As we continue the investigation of the GO 17 ABI, NOAA's operational geostationary constellation is functioning healthy and well. GO 16, which is operating as GO East, GO 15 is operating as GO West, and GO 14 is operating as our on-orbit spare over the middle of the country, are all healthy, monitoring weather as required across the nation every day. So there is no impact to the performance of the system as we address the performance of this particular issue instrument on one of the elements in space. I have with me today Pam Sullivan and Tim Walsh, who are from the GOES-R program and well-versed in the mission and the instrument, and Joe Pica, who's the director of the Office of Operations from NOAA's National Weather Service, to help answer questions that you may have related to this issue. And right now I'll turn it back to John and we'll open it up to questions.
Thank you so much. Operator, I think we're ready now to start taking questions.
Thank you. At this time, if you'd like to ask a question, first please ensure your phone is unmuted, then press star 1 and record your name when prompted. A recording is required so I can introduce your question. Once again, that is star 1 to ask your question over the phone line. Please stand by for questions to come through. Okay, our first question will be coming from Marcia Dunn. Your line is open, Marcia.
Yes, thank you. You know, it sounds like a serious problem. How serious is this, and what seems to be the problem exactly, and when was it discovered?
So I'll start with that, and I'll let Pam or Tim step in to add additional details. This is a serious problem. This is the premier instrument on the GOES, Earth-pointing instrument on the GOES platform, and 16 channels, of which 13 are infrared or near-infrared, are important elements of our observing requirements. And if they are not functioning fully, we will it is a loss. It is a performance issue we have to address. So we're treating this seriously. We've been working on this for about 3 weeks now from the initial startup in late April, trying to get the system operating functionally according to performance. We're treating this very seriously with the multi-agency and contractor and technical team to address to try and understand the anomaly and find ways to start the engines, if you will, of the cooling system to function properly. Kim, did you want to add anything?
No, just I will emphasize that many of our products, our 34 products that we have for the ABI, are all utilizing bands that are with that are impacted by this anomaly.
Could you tell me what exactly is wrong, though? Is it even working at all, or is it just partly working, or does it look like, you know, and why do you think, any ideas so far of what went wrong?
Sure, I can start, and then I may defer over to Pam Sullivan, the flight project manager. But basically, the cooling system on board the Advanced Baseline Imager is utilized to keep the focal planes that image the Earth, the various 16 wavelengths that we image the Earth, at proper temperatures. The visible wavelengths are actually able to be kept at a proper temperature throughout the whole day, the whole 24-hour cycle. The other wavelengths, the near-infrared and infrared wavelengths, the other 13, need to be cooled to some extent beyond the capability of the system at present. And so that there's a portion of the day centered around satellite local midnight where the data is not usable, and that's currently what we're addressing. Pam, I don't know if you want to add to that.
No, I think that was accurate. I'll say that we, you know, have brought in the NASA and industry experts and NOAA expertise in the observing regimes to try to help us, you know, resolve this. We have brought in the best people that we think can help us with this issue.
Okay, our next question then is coming from Angela Fritz. Your line is open, Angela.
Hey, guys. Thanks for doing this. Yeah, it does seem pretty serious. First question, I wanted to make sure I heard that right, that this problem is affecting all of the bands, and that includes visible. Did I hear that right?
Actually, there are 16 bands, Angela, on the ABI instrument, and of which 13 are impacted by this issue. So the three, as Dr. Bowles mentioned earlier, the three shorter wavelength bands that are below 1 micron are all unaffected. They're the so-called visible bands.
Okay. So this is my main question here is, without those 13 bands, the near IR and the IR, how does that impact what is being fed into the global forecast models? As I understand, the infrared is an important component of that, and so how is that going to affect modeling?
So we'll turn that one to Joe Pica from the operations side.
Thanks for your question, Angela. So the primary input into the numerical weather prediction models is basically the derived motion winds as well as the radiances, and the input of the infrared bands is very key, particularly for height specifications of those winds. So some of the bands reflect upper-level winds, mid-level winds, lower-level or lower-level water vapor. So those different bands would allow us to characterize those winds that go into those models at different heights, and without that, there's a loss of accuracy for those winds.
Do you have any idea what kind of loss of accuracy? And you know, 17 is supposed to be our west satellite. You know, that's also important. The fact that it's the west satellite, as things are coming in off the Pacific. I'm trying to get a handle on, you know, how much this is going to impact forecasts going forward. Is it a matter of, do you think they're going to be degraded, or do you think they're just not going to be as good as they could be with a functioning 17? In other words, are we no worse off than we are without 17?
So we're going to be looking at that. We need some time to evaluate what that full extent is. We've been examining the capabilities of the derived motion vectors with GOES-16 as that has gone into operations. And so it's going to take a little bit of time to evaluate that overall. I will just, you know, restate that we do have the full constellation working now, including using the derived motion vectors from Himawari at this time in our models. So we're getting some of that information. So right now we're still operating fully, getting that into the models, and we're going to have to take some time to evaluate what would be the impact of this on that potential capability going forward.
What is and the I'd like to, for
if I could, I'd follow up with what Joe Pica just said, and that is we are still assessing the performance degradation under current operating conditions for the instrument, and the different infrared channels require different degrees of cooling and are impacted in different amounts. So as we look at the impact of this current performance against all those projected performance parameters that Joe just mentioned, it will vary from channel to channel and from product to product. It's a fairly complex mix of output products we want from these observations and how they fit into the models that are going to take us time to assess and to figure out the best way to mitigate through other means if possible.
Right. So you're saying that it might be partially usable.
Oh, it is entirely partially usable. Even if we get no better performance than we've seen during the initial startups, we have a lot of information, a lot of performance from the spacecraft and from the instrument.
Is 17IR currently being used in the GFS right now?
No, it is not. We're still in the 6-month checkout.
Right.
Right. Okay.
There's a lot of work prior to that happening.
And then just a quick question, basic question: when is T launching again?
Right now, the T launch readiness date is roughly it's in May 2020. We can move that as needed. One thing that we'll obviously do is have to check out the ABI design as part of the investigation. If anything needs to be changed, we need to have obviously that be one of our top priorities.
Harris was the developer of the ABI?
Correct. Harris Corporation, Fort Wayne, Indiana, is the place where it was designed and built.
All right. Thank you.
Sure.
Our next question is coming from Marcia Smith. Your line is open.
Thanks so much. I'm trying to get at some of the same questions that were just asked. Basically, you know, if it's the worst case scenario and you can't use those 13 channels, is the satellite still very useful? And can you move up the launch date of the next satellite? But part of that, of course, is what's wrong with this instrument. Were there any symptoms at all on GO 16 that something might be wrong with the instrument on GO 16? Do you think this might be just a one-off problem with this one instrument and not something that will affect the ones for T and U?
I'll start this and then turn it over to Tim and Pam on the second part of your question. The worst case scenario does not mean we don't have any channels on the infrared. The current performance, as I said, this is Steve Volz. As I said a moment ago, is we are getting degraded performance on the infrared and near infrared channels. Not zero performance, but degraded. So significant performance from those, we're trying to assess what exactly the performance is. And the visible are working quite well. So to answer your first part of your question, we still have a highly capable functioning spacecraft and mission. Even under the current operating conditions that we're seeing in the initial test period. And the second part on is a good question related to what happened and how are we and is it something we've seen before? And that's why we have all of the players involved in the build, the design, the manufacture, build, and test of the GO 16 ABI, the GO 17 ABI, the Himawari ABI, all Harris built the same instrument for us and for the Japanese Met Agency. Three of those instruments in orbit and functioning quite well, Himawari 8 and 9 and GO 16. So we are definitely looking at the performance on our performance data of those three instruments and the pre-launch test data of all the versions of ABI to understand what might be the root cause of the problem we're seeing on GO 17. It's too early. We do not have a conclusion on that yet, but if you're familiar with the space flight version of what we call a fishbone diagram or a fault tree, identifying all the possible causes to an anomaly based on the performance you see. We're still developing and analyzing the individual potential contributing factors to the failure mode. We are not completed with that yet, and it's going to take time. As you can imagine, doing this remotely from 22,000 miles below, only looking at the on-orbit data is a challenge. But we're used to doing this. We've done this in the past, you know, the way we do spaceflight checkouts. But it is going to take some time to figure out what the root cause is and whether there is similarities in any of the other instruments that we didn't notice before. And with that, I turn it over to Pam, who has been the flight program director for the flight segment for many years on this program, to see if she had anything she wanted to add related to the ABI.
Just to characterize the problem that we're seeing a little bit, the nominal design of ABI, we try to cool the infrared detectors down to 60 Kelvin. What we're seeing, and we were able to do that successfully on a GO-16 without any issue, and the Himawari satellites as well that are the same, similar instrument design, had no issue with that. What we're seeing on 17 is that we can only achieve that operating temperature about half of the day, and that's because at over the course of the orbit, we see different thermal conditions, different sun conditions that change how hot the instrument gets, and during the hot part of the orbit, the thermal load increases to the point where we're not able to cool the detectors down. So that's the issue that we're trying to address is with the thermal system and the transport of the heat from the detectors during that hot part of the orbit.
And what do you cool it with?
It's a multi-part system. We actually use a mechanical cooler to lower the detector temperature. We're not seeing an issue with that. The problem is that the cryo cooler, the mechanical cooler, is overheating because the heat pipes that transport the heat from the cryo cooler to the external radiator, that heat pipe radiator system does not seem to be working as intended right now.
And how far along are the other ABI instruments for the other two satellites? I mean, are they at a point where they're already completed and on the shelf, or can you still make changes to them?
But those TNU instruments are completed, but we have the ability to make changes if needed to improve this issue.
Thank you very much.
Our next question is coming from Ryan Francisco. Your line is open, Ryan.
Yes, Pam answered part of this. I was trying to figure out if this was more mechanical or like computer circuitry that we're talking about. So it sounds like it's a mechanical problem.
Something in the thermal subsystem right now, which is mechanical and sort of fluid dynamic.
And of course, by not knowing exactly what it is, you're not sure how to fix it, correct?
Not yet.
Would there be? How would you go about doing that? Have Harris do like simulations?
I would suggest that we are still trying to develop the test and evaluation process to understand and sort of test run various scenarios which could lead to the performance that we have. We don't want to sort of precursor. We don't want to pre-label those. The team as they work through it. We do have, as Pam said. And instruments on the ground. We have engineering hardware for all the pieces of this, and they'll be looking at a lot of different ways to try and replicate the performance on orbit. One thing I did want to mention is that in the performance on orbit, as I think Tim mentioned earlier, this is a diurnal problem. It's an issue that shows up depending on what the sun-earth angle is on the instrument. We are getting full functional capability and at operating temperatures for half the day already on all the channels. So the comment about is this a mechanical or a computer or a system problem, the spacecraft, all of those other features of the system are working well without any notable anomalies that could lead to this particular problem. So we have a focus on where the issue is and where the issue is not and where the performance is doing quite well for the instrument and for the mission itself. But it is thorny enough in this complex thermal environment that it's going to take us time to tease out the potential causes of the anomaly itself.
Our next question then is coming from Jeff Faust. Your line is open, Jeff.
Hi, I just wanted to quickly clarify one of the points made earlier. Is the ABI on GO-17 identical to the ones on GO-16 in the Himawari satellites, or are there, you know, perhaps subtle differences among the instruments that may or may not actually be contributing to this issue.
Pam, why don't you take that one?
Yeah, the design is identical for all the instruments. Himawari has a slightly different spectral band than ABI, but that's not relevant to the issue that we're seeing. So there may be, as with any manufactured item, you know, unit-to-unit variability, but the intent really is that the design is the same for all of them.
Great, thanks.
As a reminder, press star 1 if you'd like to ask a question. Our next question is coming from Paul Vusen. Your line is open, Paul.
Hi. Just a reminder, please say who's speaking when you're talking. So you mentioned 60 Kelvin for when the cooling is working. What temperature are the instruments sitting at the other half of the day when the cooling's not sufficient?
I think at this point, this is Steve Volt speaking, the temperature varies depending on sun angle and position around the orbit. So we achieve an operating temperature at 60 for that one particular one or higher temperatures for others. And when it's not at 60, we consider that out of spec, and it warms up and then comes back down again. So there's no single answer to that question. It's just not in spec, not in performance specification for a period of the day, as I would like to phrase it.
Is there just having some sense of how far away it is would be helpful, though.
Well, the worst case we have is that at the for the coldest detectors, they're functioning, they are in spec for about 12 hours of the day.
Mm-hmm. But no top number you'll
back down again over the previous other portion.
And is it what is the lifetime estimate for the current goes west and the backup?
Let's see.
I can take that.
Tim, for that one.
So GOES 15 is currently GOES West. There's two different items in play here, one of which is spacecraft lifetime or design lifetime, and then there's fuel availability. We have enough fuel to go for another period of a number of years up till 2025, but instruments are close to their design life at present. So the thing I would augment that answer, though, with is that GOES 14, which is our center. It's certainly sitting at center of the United States at 105 degrees west longitude. It is it also is available in through 2024 as far as fuel lifetime. So we have two spacecraft that we could use to augment whatever we do in the GOES West area.
And you know, in a worst case scenario, with half the day at kind of current preferred conditions, is that something that could still be useful, you know, that you could have it half the day providing what you want and still get a lot of value from that?
I'll turn that over to Joe Pica.
I think absolutely we would utilize it to its maximum benefit as best we could. I think the full evaluation is going to take some time to basically see what would we have to do in particular during that time that it wasn't operating fully to spec.
It's worth noting, and this is Steve Volt speaking, if you think about the use of GOES 16 over the past, the imagery you've seen of GOES 16 during the hurricane season and the like, those daytime images and all that opportunity, we were fully functioning during the daytime. So the kind of imagery we saw during the hurricane season the last year for GOES 16 during the day is comparable to what we will see from GOES 17 at current performance during the day. It's the nighttime when we have the heating issues that we're trying to address.
Thank you.
Our next question, I believe, will be coming from Nick Stewart. Nick, your line is open.
Hey, good morning. I just want to clarify something real quick. I think you just did a pretty good job the last question there, but when you're saying it, the imager itself is cooled down to 60, that's 60 Kelvin, correct? And then the issue is when it's on kind of basically the day side of the Earth, when it's in the sunlight, that's kind of the issue with the heating element, correct? It just doesn't seem to be cooling it below that 60 Kelvin, correct?
One bit of clarification. This is Tim Walsh. I do want to mention that it might be intuitive, it might be counterintuitive, but during the daytime portion of the orbit is actually when the back end of the ABI or the non-boresight end is actually looking away from the sun. So when I say if the issue is centered around the middle of the night from the spacecraft's perspective, what we call spacecraft midnight, And so it's plus or minus a certain amount of hours. In this case, it's around 6 hours around that time frame, which is around midnight local time. Local time, East Coast as well, because we're very close to the East Coast over the equator. So that's basically when the sun is actually pointing down the bore site of the instrument is probably the worst time thermally for the instrument as far as heating is concerned. And Pam, I don't know if you would clarify anything with that one.
No.
Visually, you can think of it as the sun is over the shoulder of the Earth as you're looking at the Earth,
yep.
And it's shining right into the aperture of the camera.
Okay, thank you.
And once again, as a reminder, please press star 1 if you'd like to ask a question. We have an additional question from Angela Fritz. Your line is open.
Hi, yeah, just one follow-up. Are these temperatures, over the long period, are we concerned about any actual physical damage to any of the instruments without being able to be cooled, over time?
This is Tim Alston. Oh, go ahead, Pam. Sorry.
I was going to say the only instrument affected is the Advanced Baseline Imager, and we're not worried about operating at these higher temperatures. Even when we go above the 60 Kelvin, the temperatures we're going to are still below room temperature, so below where the instrument has spent most of its design and build life.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
And next we do have an additional question from Marcia Dunn. Your line is open.
Yes, thank you. I can't help but remember how excited everyone was to get the wonderful pictures back from GOES-16 when it started working. How upsetting was it for the team to have to be faced with this kind of problem right from the get-go with 17?
This is Steve Volz. I'll speak first, and I'll let the team who lived this much more than I have talk to it. It's obviously not what you want to see. It is deflating when you want to see just exactly the same thing we saw before, given the dramatic success that GOES 16 was, as well as HIMARRI 8 and 9. So we expected the same performance, and we still hope for that. But it is a little bit upsetting to see this happen. Having been in the spaceflight program for many years, though, it is not unusual and not unheard of in my program. My lifetime, I've seen this on a half a dozen instruments over the years when anomalies occur that you have to adapt to and recover from. And it's never as bad as it looks the first time you see it, and we're certainly ready to maximize the performance of this system, even given the compromise that we're seeing right now. Now, as far as the deflating, I'll turn it over to the team. Pam Sullivan and Tim Walsh have been working this many years.
Pam, I'll mention something real quickly, and then I'll hand it over to you. But this is Tim Walsh, and I'll say from my perspective, I think the one thing that's really encouraging, and as Steve says, it is deflating when you see something like this, especially as compared to what we saw in GOES-16. However, the amount of the team is an incredible team, and I think the motivation that people get, the challenge that they get when they see something that's non-optimal is really encouraging. I think that the amount of questions and suggestions and comments have been tremendous. And I think we've also started to work with the team here at NESDIS to try to figure out if things were at the whole spectrum, whether we fix it completely or we do not fix it completely, how do we maximize the mission? And I think that's where the team is focusing right now. But I will say before I hand it over to Pam that I think the team that Pam has assembled to pull together and look at the issue here is probably, as we were talking about earlier, some of the world's leading experts in this area. So I think it's really encouraging as to whom we've pulled together. Pam?
Some similar things, yeah. The people were certainly expecting, GOES 17 to look like 16 to, come out of the box shiny and new, and it was shocking, actually, when we ran into this problem. And the team understands, the importance of the satellite and the mission it does, so they understand the ramifications as well. That said, people have dug in. We're not even close to out of ideas. There are, lots of lines of inquiry of things that could be the problem, and lots of ideas about things to try to address those, and also a lot of work about, what can we do to improve the situation, even if the thermal performance doesn't improve. There's other changes that we could make operationally that could mitigate this. And as Tim said, people are being very creative about trying to recover ABI fully or as much as possible.
Thank you. And also, I think I heard someone say that the problem seems to be somewhere along the heat pipes going out, leading out to the radiator. What is used exactly as part of this cooling system to get down those low temperatures? What's the material being used, the fluids or whatever it is?
The fluids inside the heat pipes are propylene.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
It's propylene. It's the working liquid that, the way the heat pipe works is there's a gas and a liquid inside, and the heat loads from the instrument come to a device called the evaporator, where the propylene liquid is turned into a vapor, and then the vapor is transported to the radiator, which is facing space, and so that cools the vapor down to a liquid and returns it back to the evaporator to pick up more heat load.
I'm sorry. Yeah, your line's a little fuzzy for me. What is the gas and liquid actually? What liquid is being used here?
It's propylene.
Pam, why don't we suggest, and John, we need, rather than have everybody take notes and figure it out, let's go ahead, John.
Yeah, what I'll do is I'll assemble an information sheet with some of these terms and get that ready to send out to the reporters. So I think that might make it easier.
That would, but I have to say Pam's line is particularly a little garbled for me, but that's okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Our next question is coming from Meredith Garfalo. Meredith, your line is open.
Well, first off, hi, everybody. I know it seems like the launch was, a couple of weeks ago, even though it was a few months back. But my question is, and I don't think we fully discussed this, if for some reason we can't get it fixed, is this going to be something where you'll have GOES T or S become the new GOES West when it launches, and will you move that launch date up? I mean, again, this is worst-case scenario if we can't get things back and going.
So this is Steve Volz. Let me take that one. Meredith, nice to talk to you again. So the first thing we need to do is to understand the anomaly and whether or not it affects the other elements, the GOES-T and U spacecraft and missions, because those ABI, as Pam Sullivan mentioned, are complete and in our hands. We need to make sure we understand and fix that. It is not our intention at this point. We have not defined new launches for the dates. There are some things you can't move up too much. We are prepared GOES-T for a 2020 launch, as Tim mentioned earlier. And at this point, it's premature to say where or how we would change that launch date. Our focus right now is the constellation we have on orbit, which is functioning and healthy, absent not including the one that's in checkout. So our delivery of services is not impacted. It's our future capability that would have been enhanced by the extra performance of GOES-17 to be delivered in the coming year that is on the table right now for discussion. So we will look at that. We will look at the launch cadence of the other two assets, GOES-T and U, but also at the lifetimes of the existing assets on orbit, as well as our working with our partners and other mitigations we have in to consider. Joe Pica mentioned Himawari 8. Which is providing some of the functionality, which is providing the same measurements for the Japanese Met Agency now and their backup Himawari 9. We will look to use those data as well as part of our mitigations for the loss or the loss in performance of GOES-17 when we come to the final operating conditions. So it's premature. This is not something that's going to. It's going to happen overnight in terms of understanding the root cause and assessing the best system response to that failure or that anomaly. We expect it will take a couple of months. We still have several months in our checkout period and another 2 to 4 months expected to understand it, analyze it, and define the operational mitigations to maximize system performance. So it's going to be a busy summer for us, and we will keep you and the world informed as we go through the process.
Thank you, Dr. Volz.
And once again, at this time, please press star 1 to ask a question. Please stand by for any further questions to come through. Okay, I'm showing that I have no further questions coming in from the phone lines.
Okay, thank you so much, operator. Well, I think at this time we can wrap up the call. Let me also repeat that if you do have any additional questions that you want to ask, go ahead and get in touch with me via email. That's john.leslie@noaa.gov. And thanks again for dialing in. That concludes the call. Thank you.
Once again, with that, we'll conclude today's meeting. Thank you for participating. You may disconnect your lines at this time.